Welcome back to the Thursday show. I'm your host, Joe. I'm joined by Will and Callum. This week on the Thursday show, I should probably sound a bit less enthusiastic because it is alcohol awareness week. So we're obviously going to talk about the effects of alcohol.
More serious.
Yeah, exactly. This is my serious voice. So we're going to talk about the effects of alcohol on sportsmen, maybe some examples of sportsmen and women that have been going through it. You know, how people can stumble into alcoholism, because it's for some, it's a complete mystery, and you know, no one wants to be an alcoholic, but we'll get into that a little bit later. And then we will go on to discuss the Bucks results this week. There's quite a few results to go through, so we'll go through the most important ones there. Usually we go through all of them, but we don't exactly have a lot of time this week. And then we will finish off by just looking briefly at Derby County's loss to Nottingham Forest. Saved it there. Don't know what I was doing. So, yeah, Alcohol Awareness Week is obviously this week, Monday to next Monday, I believe. And, yeah, it's all about obviously raising awareness for alcoholism. So, obviously, we're a sports show, so we're going to do it in relation to sport. We're going to do it from a student's perspective, but also an elite level perspective, because obviously none of us are actually student athletes, so we're going to have to put ourselves into the shoes of being a student athlete. You know, we're athletes in our own right, I'd say, some of us. That wasn't directed at anyone. So we're going to try and put ourselves in those shoes and see what we can come up with. So we're just like, so we're going to start this by looking at the effects of alcohol. It's very, yeah, I was about to say it's very simple. It's not simple at all. The main effects of alcohol, and I've got this all from drinkaware.co.uk, so if you want any more information, because we can only summarise, because we unfortunately don't have huge amounts of time, then please do go over there and look. But for sportsmen and women, I think the effects are actually probably quite a lot bigger than we thought, because I'm sure all of us in here have, you know, drunk quite a lot a night before a match and played, and it was probably, you know, it wasn't great, but you got through it, didn't you? Like, everyone's sort of been there and done that. But, you know, the first effect is obviously, everyone knows, alcohol is a diuretic, which means that it leads to huge levels of dehydration, which is why people get hangovers. And you combine that with sweat and doing physical exercise and not getting enough water, because you don't usually want to drink as much more water when you're hungover. You won't only perform worse, you're much more likely to go through dehydration, which is actually incredibly dangerous for athletes, especially if you're doing something like long distance running or an entire football match or something like that. That can be really bad for you. It also interferes in the way that your body makes energy. So, you know, your metabolizing of alcohol means that you have lower, over metabolizes. You have lower levels of blood sugar, so you won't be able to go as far, have as much stamina, and you'll have less energy, so you'll perform a lot worse. Those are just sort of the two main short-term effects of alcohol. The longer term are actually quite disastrous in terms of it disrupts your sleep. So if you can't sleep every night, you're obviously not going to get the recovery that you need if you want to come back from injuries, or you just, you know, you've had a rough couple of days and you need to rest before your next big match or race or whatever. You're not going to be able to do it as effectively because it disrupts your sleep. It also disrupts your growth hormones. You know, you won't be able to grow muscle as easily. These are things that athletes absolutely need to be on the top of their performance. And I'd say the last effect that I'm going to talk about is that it has one very serious effect, which is unusual heart rhythms, which means, you know, 1 or 2 days, you know, heavy exercise after heavy alcohol consumption, especially for those people that don't drink a lot, puts a lot of stress on certain organs, which means, you know, you can have heart palpitations, etc. But also over a longer period of time, this will put stress on heart disease. You can get things like liver failure, you know, stomach cancer, things like that. You know, we've seen with the huge sports stars, let's say George Best, you know, these people that have had liver transplants, you know, once or twice due to their excessive level of alcoholism, and then unfortunately died at a younger age. We're going to go on to a few more high level examples a little bit later, but I'm going to bring in my panel now. Because you guys are sitting there, bit silent, you know, twiddling your thumbs.
Oh, you're enjoying your status, Mr. Science Teacher.
Look, I spent a lot of time researching these, so I deserve it. Yeah, so we're going to go on to sort of, what do we think? This isn't like me being the teacher, me asking, what do you think? No, genuinely, we all drink, well, yeah, we do all drink alcohol here. We know the effect that it can have on not on our sports lives, you know, the outside lives. You know, what kind of effects do you think it has on the outside of people's lives? You know, there's like financial difficulties. I'll give an example. You know, it's very expensive. People build up tolerances. They have to have more and more and more. You can get yourselves into financial difficulties, debt, that can affect the, you know, huge amounts of your lives. Is there any maybe other problems anyone can think of that?
Well, the big thing, when, particularly when we talk about the elite level, is that you get, because their metabolism is quicker, because they're an elite athlete, it means that it hits them harder and quicker. But then also, it's more often sort of binges where, because if you're training or whatever, you're not going to drink at all. And then once it hits your off season, or if you're between competition or whatever, you'll then have a binge, and that'll hit them harder. It means they're more likely to have to do other stuff as well. So it's a case of, it's more likely to take drugs, or it's more likely to get yourself in some kind of trouble or whatever.
Yeah, and also for like, obviously the high profile athletes, obviously they're in the limelight, so they're more likely to maybe do things like when they're drunk, which aren't going to reflect well on them. You know, drink driving, any of these things that you see, and it, you know, it just goes around social media. All the
social media is like, they can't leave the house.
No.
Yeah. No. I you touched on a point there that I hadn't really considered, which was this sort of, there's so much scrutiny for these athletes that even, you know, they can't even let loose for one night and get drunk, and so they end up doing, you know, silly things, or not. In the case of some people, you know, we saw Jack Grealish, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, he got into trouble for stumbling outside a nightclub. I'm sure everyone here has stumbled outside of a nightclub when they're drunk. Like, that is not a not abnormal thing, but because they're an athlete, it builds even more pressure on you, and then you're more likely to do stuff like that again, to almost numb the pain, etc.
You had James Madison recently.
Yeah, exactly.
Get in trouble just for being at a casino. Not even drinking, just being there.
Yeah, and
if you actually are drinking, then that could get some trouble.
Yeah, I think the main thing that this sort of does is it almost, those people that do struggle with alcoholism, you know, maybe drink a bit too much, this sort of almost gives it that stigma of, oh, I don't want to admit this, because, you know, they're barely doing anything and they're getting all sorts of abuse. And I see myself as having a big problem, but I don't want to, you know, get myself away, you know, alienate myself from all my friends and family by having this horrendous secret. So they might not, you know, they almost go insular. You see this with, you know, a lot of drug addicts as well, where they're almost embarrassed by their problem. And I think that probably over scrutinizing of these elite level athletes probably doesn't help. I mean,
the moment it's Keith Gillespie, I think it was, who came through United, then bounced over, I believe, for it. He's basically said that when he was, because he became an alcoholic, but you have to drink at home because then people won't realize you have a problem because of that scrutinized.
Yeah, it's a really big issue for elite athletes. I mean, at the slightly lower level, there are social problems as well. You know, people who suffer from alcoholism, they don't want to go out where there are where places that you can drink. They might become, you know, more outspoken or more violent or something. You know, not as aggressive towards their friends and family, because, you know, these are the effects of alcohol and withdrawal as well. And they might not be able to relate to people who are like teetotal or don't drink as much. They feel like an outsider. They feel alienated. They, you know, they don't want to be a part of that. So that's, you know, a really big issue outside of sport. I mean, you know, we've seen this with Paul Gascoigne at the highest level. When he stopped football, you saw he admitted in interviews that he's an addictive person. He needs an addiction. Where does he turn? He turns to alcohol. Once he gets off the alcohol, where does he turn? He turns to things like sweets. These are people that need this sort of never-ending addiction within their lives. And once the sport is given up, that can turn people into alcohol. And I think that, you know, that's the next point we're going on to. Why do we think people turn towards alcohol? Obviously, you know, as far as I'm aware, we're not recovering alcoholics in here. We don't know, but what do we think?
Well, in terms for like professional footballers, whatever, like when they retire, that's just, it's probably quite an early age for anyone to retire, like 35 maybe. And yeah, and you know, that can be really hard for them to deal with, suddenly, you know, not going and doing your routine every day, and obviously coupled that with now they're actually not playing, you know, there's less restraints on their diet and actually having alcohol.
They've done it right, they have money, so they don't have to work still, so they have a lot of time to do nothing without restraints.
Yeah, and when they've then retired, they're doing nothing, you know, you see a lot of players coming out with like mental health issues, and it's kind of similar. They can then turn to kind of alcohol. I think I'm right in saying John Walters, I was listening to a podcast of him quite recently. Obviously, he had a lot of family issues as well with, you know, illness and things, but he was also out injured and then was forced to retire. And then he was like, well, what did I turn to? And he had alcohol for a bit, and I think he's obviously turned away from that now, but it's just quite an easy thing for people to fall into when they've all of a sudden retired.
With how socially acceptable it is, particularly in terms of it's more acceptable and therefore more available than something like drugs or even smoking, but then also so much social interaction requires alcohol for a lot of people. Like, so if it's going out at all, it's almost exclusively requiring alcohol. So if you've had a problem at any point, it's harder to then disentangle yourself from that.
Yeah, completely. Let's bring ourselves now down to more of the student, you know, level athlete. You know, we talked about the sort of the outside effects that it has on their lives. It's actually quite similar to the elite level in terms of the social problems, financial problems, etc. Maybe not the financial, but, you know, definitely the social. But I was reading a study that said that, you know, 44% of college athletes binge drink, 93% of college athletes in America in 2014 drank alcohol in the past year. That's a study by Reardon and Greedo, if you want to go have a look at that. You know, these are absolutely crazy numbers for people that when we know for a fact that alcohol is detrimental to your body when you do sport. Why are these guys drinking?
It's like that same sort of thing as what I was talking about before, where it's like, because you're sort of being good so much at the time in terms of what you're putting into your body. So then when you sort of like, okay, I'm going to have... It's almost like being on a diet and having a cheat day, where it's like, okay, I'm going to completely go for it on this one time. So it's not surprising that there's a lot of binge drinking within that, and it's same as over here, where you've got a lot of it is sort of culturally, it's a case of, okay, we're going to have a sort of party, social, whatever, for the team, and then the team does a whole load of drinking games and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously this... that was like college... sport, which obviously a lot higher level than it is in the UK, but
that's different. Where you have the different age changes how you can drink.
That's true.
But still, in like even in the UK, like I mean, you see them all in crisis, all the teams going together, and that's like their way of socialising or maybe celebrating a victory. I mean, I would think if you didn't drink alcohol, you'd probably be thinking you're missing out on kind of bonding team situations where they will go out and celebrate. And that's what you that would be what they count as binge drinking, because obviously it's like
It's basically more like three or four.
Yeah,
it's sort of
more like more than basically 3 pints of beer or something like that would be.
Yeah,
I guess cut off.
Yeah, completely. I mean, to be probably people out there who are listening, especially if you're a student, it's probably not going to be something nice to hear. But on I think it's alcohol.org's website, they suggested that any more than 10 standard drinks a week constituted unsafe alcohol consumption. So just be aware that you know, it's, you know, for a short period of time it's not so bad. This is over probably a longer period of time where it really becomes dangerous. It's just information for those out there. You were talking about sports teams going out to crisis, going out to clubs and stuff, and how maybe they peer pressure one another, maybe not even on purpose, to go out. They just feel like they're going to miss out, because often people suggest that no one's physically peer pressuring them. It's almost the indirect peer pressure of, they're going to think I'm a nothing, we're not going to be friends, you know, they're not going to be impressed by me. But is there almost a stereotype with certain clubs, like the rugby club, which we all know go out to Ocean, well, I don't know about Ocean, but they go out to crisis. They definitely do at Trent, go out to Ocean. And there's almost a culture of, we have to be those lads that, you know, drinks all the pints, you know, does all these things, have to get absolutely smashed week in, week out. And maybe that doesn't help. Maybe that pressures them more and more into drinking and turning to binge drinking. Is that something that maybe you could subscribe to?
It won't help at the very least, because you're going to have a core group, in part because it's very much the culture for these sports more generally, as opposed to, you know, these university clubs. But and then it's a case of, so you're going to get a corporate rebuild, we'll do that anyway. But sort of taking the ones who wouldn't ordinarily do it, but because they're part of this sport, they'll then, get peer pressured into doing that too.
Because, I mean, go back to the team bonding thing. Like, I obviously, I have no experience with this, but I doubt there's many non-alcohol related social as they do.
It's like with every
society. It's kind of anything, yeah, really.
Well, it's like the rest of society here, where it seems like, because everyone's sort of like, yeah, we shouldn't have everything be about alcohol. So they're really good at the start of the year, and then as the year goes along, it's more, oh, what are we going to do for social? Oh, let's go hodge and stuff like that. So it's, as the year goes along, everyone gets worse at doing sober socials.
I would even say, even on my field trip last week, like, if you didn't drink alcohol there, you know, you kind of be missing out, really. Like, that's kind of the go-to thing. Like, if you want to get to know people, kind of go out to a bar and drink. And the same with the sports teams.
So then it also doesn't help with sort of diversity, because obviously with some religions you can't drink.
Mm. Yeah.
So you're going to instantly feel like that.
Yeah, and that's another, you know, another part is alienation completely. So we're sort of suggesting, if I'm right, that this is more of a structural sort of, this is uni life, pretty much. This is not sports clubs only. This is pretty much every society. I mean, I agree.
Some sports clubs are worse than others, and some societies are better than us, but, like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit before the show. I don't think we mentioned this yet, but initiation ceremonies, they're really, really infamous, and something that we all know is something that can be really, really dangerous. Does that not help towards maybe the stigma towards maybe drinking and socially, what is socially acceptable to drink?
The biggest way it probably wouldn't help is they'll set a high bar,
yeah,
for sort of what's acceptable. So it's like, okay, it's not as bad as initiation where you had to do whatever kind of drinking. So it's sort of, then everything else becomes more acceptable.
Yeah.
Because you put that bar higher, so then it's like, okay, it's not the worst thing we've had to do.
Yeah, because I think I've definitely read stuff about people banning certain, obviously, initiations. Some of them you hear about are just awful, but there's still going to be a certain level. If it's maybe, even if it's just like down in a couple of drinks, yeah, it's still like probably more than people would want to do.
Drinks in a certain amount of time.
Yeah,
those kind of initiations aren't necessarily going to get banned.
No, I agree. I mean, even I don't want to put your end, you know, into this mix, but there are certain socials that we have. I'm not going to say specifics. Where, you know, drinking to an incredible level is definitely encouraged, and, you know, you almost get a higher social status. I don't really want to put maybe so, like,
don't
friends and stuff. No, I don't want to throw anyone about us, but I don't want to put, like, friendship into sort of levels and stuff, because I think that's stupid and it's kind of a different argument.
Yeah, I mean, alcohol is a bonding mechanism.
Yeah, it's a social lubricant.
Yeah.
And especially at university, at the beginning of the year, when everyone is feeling just awkward because they don't know each other. You're thrown into a place where you don't know each other, and suddenly you have to become friends. And alcohol is a really easy way to almost take away, like, the nerves. You know, there's a reason why they call it, like, Dutch courage, isn't there? Because it encourages you to talk to people you wouldn't usually talk to.
Effects of alcohol in terms of just beyond the purely biological is they lower your inhibitions.
Yeah,
so,
completely.
Yeah, it's going to make it easier to socialise.
Yeah. I think maybe the last reason that I'd probably say, which we probably already touched on a little bit anyway, is just people that are social drinkers that become addicts. This is actually probably maybe one of the more common ways in which to become an alcoholic, is that you are drinking, and those people that maybe have an addictive personality, they drink and they like the feeling of being drunk. You know, I want to put this out there on this show. We are not saying you can't drink alcohol, it's bad for you. No, you can, and you can enjoy the feeling of being drunk and don't feel guilty about it. It's when it becomes excessive and dangerous is when we need to probably talk about it. And that's what social drinking can become. It can be wanting to feel drunk, but your tolerance is built up, so it's more and more and more. And suddenly you're in a stage where, you know, you're drinking 7 or 8 pints when someone else only needs to drink 2. And you don't feel like it's that bad because you're feeling exactly the same as you would on R2. So it can become really dangerous in that aspect. Also, actually, mental health issues is something that, when I was doing reading for this, is something that is pretty much consistent throughout, is what affects people and makes people go, you know, turns people towards alcohol, and that they want to almost, you know, stop the bad feelings or stop whatever mental health issue they have. And alcohol can obviously do that for a limited period of time, but the more they, you know, the longer it's stopped, the more people want to continue with it, and that's something that can be really, really dangerous. And
particularly when it's university, where you're going somewhere where it's putting yourself in a shock situation, where it's away from home, you might not have any friends initially, so then it's easy to sort of like, okay, I'll start drinking by myself in my room, and then it gets worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, completely. I mean, only in the past 2 or 3 years have we really even accepted that, you know, these professional athletes who we have to say, you know, have the elite mentality, you know, can have mental health issues. You know, you, you can have depression and be really great at football. That's not something that's mutually exclusive, and I think maybe that's something we need. I'm glad we've raised on this show, because I think it's definitely really, really important to say that's why some people might turn to alcohol and stuff. There are examples in sport of people, you know, that would drink huge amounts of alcohol. I mean, it's easy to say, you know, we had this whole footballing culture throughout the 70s and 80s and even early 90s before Manchester United, Arsene Wenger started saying no to alcohol, of these massive drinking cultures, and that would lead to alcoholism within tons and tons of players. You know, Paul Gascoigne, Tony Adams,
Ray Parlour.
Yeah, exactly, Ray Parlour. Yeah, I mean,
Razor Ruddock.
Half the Arsenal players of that era.
Yeah,
they've had issues with alcoholism.
Exactly. So we're now saying, you know, at the student level, you know, we're saying, oh, it's really easy to be part of that culture. At the elite level, it's the same. You know, these things are transferable. You know, there are some people that you might not have heard of that having alcohol issues. You know, Jimmy Greaves back in the 60s and 70s had a huge alcohol issues, and, you know, admitted in 1979 that he'd really, really struggled with it for many, many years. And that's the problem, I think, that we need to highlight, is that these people often, it's only years and years afterwards, when they've started to put a handle on this problem, that they come out and say it, because it's just a stigma that we need to get round. Like the mental health that we're trying to do at the moment, these kind of things need to be destigmatized together. You know, we're in Nottingham, the absolute famous one is obviously Brian Clough. That completely derailed his entire life, never mind Nottingham Forest and their footballing trajectory. You know, he himself is absolutely sure that if he hadn't turned to drink, they would have missed out on relegation. And, you know, we could be talking about a completely different Nottingham Forest. So it's just, I think it's nice to maybe end this discussion with a few examples of, you know, this isn't, if anyone's out there listening and is struggling with this, you know, you're not alone. It's not just the stigma of, you know, you're a 40 or 50 year old man, unemployed, got no prospects in life, so you just turn to the bottle. No, these are people at all levels in life that can be affected by this. You know, I don't want to draw too many comparisons between these two, but you know that how the classic cliche of, you know, cancer just chooses victims at random. This is alcoholism sometimes chooses victims at random. You know, you can just fall into it through no fault of your own. So we're going to finish this section on alcoholism and talk about something a bit lighter in a minute. But I think we probably haven't done our job properly if we haven't at least pointed out a couple places where people can sort of go. If maybe you think you might be an alcoholic, or you're struggling with alcoholism. So if you yourself think, you know, maybe I have issues with alcoholism, then you can do the CAGE test, which is a really simple assessment, which is just a four-question test. In fact, I'm going to read out right now. C, have you ever felt you should cut down on your drinking? A, have people annoyed you by criticising your drinking? G, have you ever felt bad or guilty about your drinking? Or E, for eye-opener, have you ever had a drink first thing in the morning to steady your nerves or get rid of a hangover? Have you responded to these questions? Will's sort of shaking his head thinking, I've done that. No, I think this is on a regular basis. This is on a, you know, weekly.
Literally once you've had a drink.
Yeah, so don't be like, oh, I'm an alcoholic because you did that once. No, this has to be over a long, sustained period of time. For someone else, just look, there are a lot of signs. A lack of interest in previously normal activities. You know, appearing drunk more regularly, like that's an obvious one, but it is definitely something you should look out for. Needing more drinks, you know, if someone you know's tolerance has gone skyrocketed for some reason, maybe look at that. People who are feeling, you know, appearing tired, unwell, or just irritable, you know, that's not one day they're feeling a bit grumpy. This is over a sustained period of time again. You know, an inability to say no. Can you offer them a drink no matter what the time they say yes? And if so, then they might be struggling. You know, and maybe if they're becoming secretive, or they're lying, that, you know, that's not exclusive to alcohol. That's actually something that affects mental health issues all around, a lot of them. And I think that one's definitely one of the most important. So if you think someone else is, or you think you might be, first step is acknowledging the problem. So you've done that if you're trying to diagnose yourself, so well done. Then go see your GP. I mean, it's definitely the best way to go and do it. They'll be able to refer you to specialists. They'll be able to help you get treatment. If you're not feeling that comfortable about that, then there are loads of alcohol support services. You can just literally just type that into Google. But an easier one is obviously, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous and Helpline, or go online. And that's it for the alcohol section of this show. We'll come back and we'll talk about Bucks. Welcome back to the Thursday show. As said before, we are going to be talking about all things Bucks. There's a lot of results here, so unfortunately we can't go through them all. This week did not go as well as other weeks, unfortunately. But, you know, you win some, you lose some. That's the
quite literally in these sports. Yeah.
See what you did there, son. You can draw some. See, done him there. Our win percentage was 53%, so, yeah, not great. Professionalism. Which results would you like to do, Will? Which ones would you like to do?
I want to go...
You're the master.
Well, I think we should just pick out the better ones, really, because we want to dwell on some of these poor weeks.
Classic impartial journalism.
I think if we... Volleyball have had another good week.
Yeah, I'm literally just looking at that one.
5 wins out of 6, and... It's a bit of a theme, then, because I think every other week we've been talking about them, I think they've been getting kind of clean sweeps.
They've done. We've been talking about them the last few weeks, and they always seem to do pretty well. They might get a loss here and there, but most of the time...
I think it's a bit more shout, because we usually get to them, we go in alphabetical, and it's like them second last, and by the time they're like, oh, we need to move on. They did, a very good week. Obviously, men's first, probably the standout against Loughborough first. Beating them 3-0, so yeah, overall volleyball probably the stars of the week, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, obviously table tennis had a pretty good week as well, but they actually lost 2 out of my math 7. Did you see that men's thirds beating Loughborough first? That's an incredible win. Other ones to forget, we got to go there. Really harsh. I don't want to go there now. Lacrosse, not their best week. All men's teams losing there, but all women's teams winning. So you
win some, you lose.
I was going to do it, and then I decided I can't. Hockey had a pretty good week. They had a lot of games. My math says correctly, they had 12 games, and they won 9. Yeah, okay, math is my strong suit. They lost to Trent first and Trent seconds, unfortunately,
and their fourths.
All
their losses were to Trent.
Yeah, not a great week for them. And then we're trying to look for other teams that did well, but we're struggling a little
Badminton
bit.
Did pretty decently.
Badminton, yeah.
4 out of 7 isn't too bad.
No, 4 out of 7 isn't bad. You know, wins against Birmingham, great team. Loughborough again. We're getting all the wins against Loughborough, which is obviously good to see in the old fight for first. We still, unfortunately, don't know where we are because Bucks play. We don't want to blame the app. We don't want to blame the app, but where's the actual overall score, guys?
That used to be the main thing, just on their website as well, just like on the homepage. You can just see the table without going into depth with all these stuff, which obviously is actually good. We can actually see all the tables, everything else, but it could be a bit more useful if we could see the overall standings.
Yeah, so we're completely blaming someone else, unfortunately, but that's the way it goes. What you can see, though, about Bucks play, apparently we're talking about this now, is that actually it's quite good to see like who's in the team and like, and you can see like overall results for the teams and stuff, which is really good. In other news, fencing getting 2 losses as well to Durham first and Oxford seconds. Football, everyone, you know, one of the most popular sports at uni, so we should probably talk about that. Getting a 2-0 loss against Derby, unfortunately. But a draw against Loughborough third for the men's seconds isn't a bad result, and the women's first beating Birmingham seconds 4-0, so great result for them.
I wonder if this whole kind of poor week got anything to do with reading week, maybe.
Ooh, or I didn't talk that.
Affected things in some way because it's just a bit of a weird week for everyone.
Yeah, but do you think the sports people go home for reading week if they have a match? Is that an acceptable excuse?
I don't know.
It would just be weird. I can see them being like, sort of a bit out.
Well, they might be on field trips as well.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, so that's what we're going to blame the results on.
It's all about reading week.
Is reading week. I'd just probably like to also point out squash, which is one I think we've been talking about over the past few weeks. I don't think, if I can remember correctly, that we've lost a squash game before this, but then we've gone and lost 3 out of 5, with the men's fourth, only losing to Lincoln's first, so I think, you know, that's not a bad result. And the men's fifth losing to East Anglia's first, and East Anglia's a huge university. The women's seconds beating Trent's first 2-2, it's a great result for them, but the women's thirds losing to Loughborough 4-0. There, I think that's probably enough of Buck's results before we all start to get really, really upset. If there's any, are there any other results that we can see that are particularly significant?
I mean, the only one which isn't on there, but that I was aware of, was that the American football team lost to Durham.
Was that the headline?
No, that was last week.
Oh, we may as well talk about so that. What was the result?
They lost both their opening games so far.
And the
unbeaten last year as well.
Yeah, and they did very well last season and the season before, so that's not a great sign.
Not a great opening, but you know, as you heard in the interview with Callum, they're quite optimistic about their chances.
Of optimistic about that first game, which
they didn't do so fly, apparently. I think we are. I know we just went to song break, but we'll go to a really, really quick one, and then we'll come back for Forest. Welcome back to the Thursday show. Yeah, that song break was a bit longer than anticipated, unfortunately. But you know, what can you do? We're going to now go on to sport in and around Nottingham. We don't actually have enough time to cover all sports, so we're just going to focus on football for this week. We haven't visited it for a while, so we have a few games to catch up on. I think we're going to go to the bigger team. Oh, that's a bit controversial.
The team higher up the ladder.
There we go, better to say. The team with two European Cups. obviously, that is Nottingham Forest. Since we last talked about them, obviously there was an international break a couple of weeks ago, so they didn't play. But they have played Luton away. Got a lovely 2-1 victory there. Lewis Grabban and Sammy Amiobi amongst the goals, would you believe it? So that's a great win for them against Luton side. Really not in form, sitting in 21st place. They then had a game just on the 9th of November, so that's Saturday, if my maths is correct.
Yep.
I think it was the early kickoff on Saturday. They beat Derby County 1-0 with a Lewis Grabban goal again. He's in amongst the goals as he was last season. He was their top scorer last season, and he's in amongst the goals again this season. That is an incredible win for Forest. They now sit in 5th place, with Derby County now in 16th place on 21 points, but only 7 off the top 6. Forest sitting in there with a game in hand, obviously due to their called-off game, which, if they win that, could potentially send them into automatic promotion and 1 point off the top. You know, what do we make of these two games? Are these massive wins, or wins that we should expect Forest to make, really?
Derby is always going to be a massive win for Forest, just for the emotional reasons. But then also, this is a side that made the playoffs last season, so beating them is a good thing.
I think because I was away, but my housemate said that you can hear all the fans from our house just obviously celebrating when the goal went in and stuff, which is pretty amazing. And obviously any game against Derby is massive for the city, and to get 3 points there, also on the back of that Luton away game, which is not an easy game. Putting them they've recovered well, because they did lose, I think, lost two games before that. So we did question maybe whether they could come back from that, but they've bounced back with two wins, so they're sitting quite nicely in fifth place now.
Yeah, completely.
Within striking distance of Mac.
Yeah, and you know, these are things that Forest fans have been itching for years and years. Lewis Grabban, now, as I mentioned, I've looked up, and he's actually now on 7 goals after 15 games, which you might not think is a lot, but he started incredibly slowly there for Forest.
Well, if you look, I think Forest only scored 20 some goals in, which is quite low for
and conceded
teams up there. So, you know, obviously 7 goals is still a decent return.
It's about the proportionality
of it. Yeah, I mean, when you look at Forest, I want to be as objective as possible, but when you look at Forest and then you look at the teams around them, Swansea, Leeds, the teams above them, sorry, Preston and West Brom, I'd say in terms of when you watch them, they look like the worst team out of those five, in my opinion. Just maybe that's because they play different brands of football and it always looks worse.
So that's a good way. You're giving yourself smaller margins. If you try and win 1-0, then if you don't do that, then you go draw or lose.
Yeah, but Forest have conceded the second least amount in the league, so obviously, I mean, I'll bring it back to Cardiff when they went up 2 seasons ago. You wouldn't, if you compared them to teams like Fulham and stuff up there, you'd have thought, oh yeah, Cardiff are the not the best team, but they didn't concede many goals, and that's probably the most important thing for getting picking up points.
Yeah, I mean, just as a last thing on Forest, you know, we're about a quarter of the way through the season now in the Championship, give or take. Oh, a third of the way through, third. Sorry, yeah. My bad, Matt. The third of the way
That's
through.
Not your strong point.
No, clearly. Gave it up at AS level. What do we actually realistically think? You know, we've done predictions. I'm really big on the predictions, if you've been following with URN. Every single time I get on a show, I really, really try to force my panels to predict. Let's do it right now. And so we can hold ourselves to it at the end of the season. If we're right, imagine how that feel. Where do we think they're going to finish?
Sixth place, I reckon. Squeeze in the last playoff place.
You think this is going to be a last second sort of, you know?
No, I think it'll be. I think it'll be them in a good position and then clinging on to the sixth place.
Okay, all right. And you said playoffs.
I said playoffs.
Well, do you want to elaborate?
Especially fifth or sixth in that same sort of getting out to a good lead and then sort of clinging on.
Okay, so they think that there's going to be a bit of a struggle at the end of the season. You know, Forest fans are not in for a nice end to the season. I'm going to throw my hat in the ring and say I think they will
Go
come. I'm wearing a hat because obviously it's URN, it's radio, so you can't hit, you can't see me. Thank God, because I look terrible. I'm going to say fifth. I'm going to say they do it comfortably. I'm going to say it's at least 3 or 4 points. Between them and the rest of the pack. County, let's move on to County. They are, as we said, slightly lower down in the conference. They have also had two games since we last spoke. A 2-2 draw at home to Hartlepool, and then a 3-2 win away in the FA Cup against Ebbsfleet, which puts them in to the second round of the FA Cup against Northampton, who are obviously in the league above, who they would have played last year in ninth in League Two. You know, that's a big game for them, and they'll definitely want to strive on and get to the all important third round, right?
Yeah, well, obviously third round, then it's the chance of getting one of those glamour ties, you know, Old Trafford or
it's always Anfield Old Trafford. Or yeah, whatever. There we go.
But yeah, and obviously I think it's just getting through in those, money's just important for money now they've dropped down into the conference.
No, completely. It's all about that money. You know, they had a good away win against Ebbsfleet. They're, you know, who are only 22nd in the Vanarama conference themselves, but you know, they all matter. Unfortunately though for County, after that draw to Hartlepool, they've actually dropped down into 8th place. The last time we spoke, I think they were in 6th or 7th. And that is because teams around them have been massively picking up form, with Harrogate 3 wins out of their last 4, Solihull Moors in 6th place, 4 wins out of the last 5, 5 wins out of the last 6 for Torquay, 5 wins out of the last 6 for Barrow as well. You know, those teams are really, really doing well. And, you know, that is that kind of psychological damage of going down into 8th place. Can do anything? Are we reading too much into this?
You can go and be bronze in the National League. Because of how many games they have in a rollout, they've got 2 games next, the week after next, in 3 days, stuff like that. You have so many games in such quick succession that if you're in a good run of form or a bad run of form, it makes a huge difference to the amount of points you pick up.
But you can go through both almost back to back, and then they sort of maybe equal each other out,
yeah,
sort of thing.
So, they've not been on the hottest. Like, teams around have been hot while they've been sort of more lukewarm. It could just as easily flip. Moment.
Yeah, so it's kind of difficult for us to read too much anything. You say it was
because it's the National League is almost permanently like how the Football League gets over Christmas.
Yeah,
it's just permanently you've got a bunch of games because they have to take time off in the winter because a lot of these sides will have poor drainage and stuff like that, so they don't want to really get into trouble with weather.
Yeah, so unlike Forest, you know, I'm not actually going to force us to make any predictions, mainly because Will's unfortunately left the studio, but also because I think it would be slightly unfair to do so, considering how close. I mean, it's obviously close.
Anything down there is a bit full down.
Yeah, it's obviously hard in the Championship, but even, you know, when you get lower, it's even more difficult. I think that's all the news we've got for this week. Unfortunately, because The cricket, obviously, the season's over. Yeah, exactly. It's over. The 100 isn't around yet, so unfortunately we can't talk about that. The ice hockey season is well and truly underway, but unfortunately we don't have time to talk to you about that, so we'll be talking to you about that next week. But that's it from me, Callum and Will. So thanks to Callum. Thanks to Will, even though he's not here anymore. And yeah, so we'll see you next... Well, you'll listen to us next week.